This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For hanging out with us, rolling along on this Tuesday edition of Money Moves, VSiN, the sports betting network, Sirius XM channel 158. He's Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni here. We're live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Last hour, had a great conversation with Stephen Hennessy of Golf Digest, breaking down all things U.S. Open. Remember, if you do want to get any of that breakdown, because he did give some good names to target and some guys to cross off of your list, you can always download Money Moves in podcast form. We just put that up, that new feed, about a month ago. So if you miss anything, make sure you hop in there. Come join us. We also have Adam Burke join us later on this hour, VSiN.com managing editor. We'll talk more golf with him, as well as a breakdown of the MLB slate, which is where we're going to start here too, looking at a little Major League Baseball. Lots of games on deck, and I saw in our rundown you have a bunch of them highlighted. So where do you want to go first?
There's a lot of good, interesting games. So I figured we should start with Cubs and Phillies, only because they are your team, and Colin Ray gets a start, who's kind of your guy. However, Colin Ray is not really in a good spot, which makes this, I think, a pretty interesting start for him. So his last start was good. He went out there, pitched 5 1/3 against the Washington Nationals. Walked one, gave up 5 hits, didn't strike out any, but didn't give up any earned runs. But what I think is interesting is that he's coming off of an outing, not a start, because Drew Pomeranz actually opened that game for Colin Ray. Ray then came in and pitched 5 1/3 for him. But he hasn't been pitching particularly well outside of that. The previous two starts for Ray, 10 2/3, 12 earned runs, got taken deep four times, struck out 11, but walked 5. And so I'm very curious to see if Ray, getting the outright start here after being opened for last time out, how he will fare on the road against this Phillies lineup, because the previous two starts prior to his last appearance, dude got rocked. And I do wonder if maybe, you know, this Cubs managerial staff is like, man, you know, maybe we should try maybe opening for him. I know their bullpen was in a place where they felt like they could do it. Obviously not this time around, but watching Ray here in this spot against this Phillies lineup, I think is going to be very interesting, because you can make the argument he, like, this regression we've seen is apt. 3.59 ERA, 4.32 fielding independent. So I do think that there's going to be – I have some interest in watching what Ray is going to bring to the table here on the road against Philly.
So you don't necessarily have a bet or a real lean. It's just a game that you want to observe, essentially, to see what you get from him. I think that's fair. We haven't seen a ton of Mick Abel on the other side either. So when I was looking at this game just to see if I could find a bet, I leaned Cubs, because I always lean Cubs, and I know what Ray is capable of, and I know what this Chicago Cubs batting lineup is like. And I mean, the Cubs, I think, like, top 5, top 8 bullpen as well. Like, team ERA is very good for the Cubs. So I leaned that direction at a pick'em price, but didn't really settle on anything here. I agree observationally, this is probably a good one.
And when the Cubs getting bet here, we saw some spots open -120 in favor of Philly. Now we're looking at the market being, what am I looking at here? Some spots pick. Other spots have, like where we're sitting right now, Circa, have the Cubs as a short favorite. So I would sit back and look. And look, if we're going to get like an even money price on Philly, I would take a bite on that if it heads in that direction. I think Ray's fine, but I don't think he's particularly great. I think Philly's good enough to get to him, especially if we're talking about getting Philly at home. You mentioned Abel. Haven't seen much from him. Not a large sample size of work, but has pitched well enough in his two appearances so far that I'd at least think that with some backing, this would be a spot for Philly. So if it heads, like, continues to head in the Cubs direction.
What do you think about the Phillies lineup, though? Like, bats-wise, the last, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games, they've only scored more than one run twice?
Yeah. I mean, I prefer a larger sample size. I understand, like, recent form has not been particularly great for Philadelphia. If you look at some of the overlying numbers, like, especially since the start of the month, if you're talking about Philly and what we've seen from them, in key categories floating around, like, 29th in Major League Baseball. There's only 30 teams. So, not good. But I would trust that this is something for the Phillies lineup that, all right, maybe a little bit of a cold streak, and you're going to eventually become the team over the larger sample size that we know you to be.
We both did have interest in this Yankees and Royals game. So I don't know if it's fair to call this a sneaky good pitching matchup, but
no,
I'm going
great.
To.
Yeah, okay. It is. Yeah.
So Max Fried, obviously we all know he's tremendous. Yep. He's one of the short shots to win the Cy Young this year. 8-1, 1.78 ERA. His last start against the Guardians, 6 scoreless innings, 1 hit, 7 strikeouts. Yes, got touched up by the Dodgers at the end of May, but aside from that, gave up just 10 combined runs over the prior 65 and a third innings. And then Noah Cameron on the other side, the young gun, would not know he is only five starts into his big league career the way that he's been playing to this point. Got called up a couple weeks back, has been so good, gone six-plus innings, giving up one run or fewer in each game so far. So I like the F5 under. And I saw in the rundown, you like the first three under, which is like your new instant gratification way of getting in on things.
Well, it's also like, so here's the thing. Yankees are a very good left-handed hitting team. They're one of the best in Major League Baseball, if not the best in Major League Baseball in certain categories. And we always talk about with these first three, again, avoiding the third time through the lineup. And for a guy like Cameron, who you don't have a lot on, but he is a southpaw, you generally hit them pretty well. He is not a guy that is dominant in terms of swing and miss stuff. He is generally going to give up contact, let his defense work. If you look at it when you talk about the fastball velo, like he's not an overpowering pitcher. He's a dude that's going to work with what he's got and get his defense involved. And I would not prefer a team that is good at hitting lefties getting a third crack at a guy in a lineup in a start like this. So that was my logic behind it. I trust that Cameron is savvy enough from what we have seen from him that he's going to be able to work his stuff and be able to get through relatively blemish-free the first couple of times, thus getting through the first three with a relatively low score, I'm hoping. And then on the other side, it's Fried. Like, we know what Fried is. And I think that I have blind faith, as I put it with Dave and Jensen this morning, that he's going to be able to hold down this Royals lineup, which has been pretty below average through the first two times facing them. That's my only worry. That's the only reason I went first three. Yes, you're right. You know, I'm lazy. Instant gratification. I don't have to watch anything afterwards. I will. This looks like a good game. But I am a little worried that once you get a little bit deeper, if Cameron lasts that long, this Yankees team, which mashes lefties, getting a third look at him, they're going to start to get to him a little bit later in the game.
Okay. Well, my F5 is already in the account. So I'm rooting for us both that we can get through there. The total for the full game, by the way, has been bet up a tick from 8 to 8.5. And the Yankees getting played here from a minus 190 favorite out to now I see minus 206 over at DraftKings. What's another game you want to get to?
All right. Let's go with, man, there's a couple of these. All right. You know what? Let's hit on Rays and Red Sox. Only because, I mean, this is, I think, a very intriguing matchup here. Lucas Giolito gets the start for the Rays, or excuse me, for the Red Sox. The Rays will send out Ryan Pepiot. It's all about Giolito. For those who don't remember, Giolito in his last start at home was against the Angels in a ridiculous game. He pitched 1 2/3. In that, he gave up 7 earned runs, just struck out one, walked another, got taken deep one time. Got absolutely smoked. And when Giolito is off, he is off. Mm-hmm. He will put up some awful, awful starts. But when he's on, he actually puts together some pretty good performances. It's such an interesting dynamic when you look at his outings, Stormy. He is either, since his first start, he has either given up 6 or more earned runs or 1 earned run or fewer. So, like, it is the epitome of extremes with Giolito, and he gets to take on the Rays here. Rays, in terms of what we have seen from them so far this year, if you're talking about their lineup, it's been pretty average for the most part, depending on what time of year, what we're looking at here. Floating around, like, 13th in terms of weighted runs created plus. If you're talking about WOBA as well for this team and where they've been at, right around 15th, so it's a pretty average lineup. Obviously, again, you're pitching at home, so like that's one where is Giolito going to get got by his own home park? But I am morbidly curious about what the bounce back is going to be here for Giolito. Overnight had the Rays as a small favorite, like minus 112 on the road. We're starting to see the market head in Giolito's direction, and I would generally agree with that move. I understand that this Red Sox team has not been playing particularly well, but Pepiot's a guy that I think has some stuff coming for him in a negative sense. 320 ERA, 435 fielding independent. Not a dominant strikeout guy, as we know. He's been getting lucky with balls in play. And if there's a ballpark where maybe you're not going to be as lucky with balls in play, could be a spot like here on the road at Fenway. So I think Giolito and the Red Sox are going to be are relatively live here today against the Tampa Bay Rays.
Brutal loss for them yesterday in game one of the series, by the way. Oh. 11 innings, they lose 10-8. I know you've been fairly interested in this Dodgers-Padres series.
Oh, that game yesterday, huh?
Yeah.
You lost out in the first five. Because it was a 6-6 tie if you laid the half run with the San Diego Padres. That game was nuts.
Dylan Cease on the hill today for San Diego. -121 favorites.
I am tempted to go back to the well here with San Diego. Cease, man, I won't quit guys like Dylan Cease. 4.72 ERA, 320 fielding independent. The strikeout numbers are there. Like, the overlying numbers are there for Cease. Like, the profile's there. He's striking out 29% of the hitters he's facing. He's only got a walk rate of about 8%, so he's balancing that out relatively nicely. Like, the problem is he's getting really unlucky on balls in play, well over 300 at this point right now. He's not stranding guys at a very high rate, float around 66%. My guy has some better stuff going for him. And we've seen the starts here and there. He just can't really get it all together in one start. Now, the question is this the lineup to try to test the, hey, Dylan Cease is going to regress to the mean here, and it's going to be against the Dodgers? I mean, maybe not. But when you see that, plus, by the way, the Dodgers are going with the Johnny Holstaff game here today, I just think Cease does have some buy signs. And the market would tend to agree with me. We saw this open at -110, pick both ways in some spots. Now we're upwards of -120 in favor of Cease and the Padres. I think that Cease is pretty alive here. I think there was some value in getting him at that price when this thing opened. I think he will put the Padres in position to win this thing tonight.
A couple more bets we'll have in Major League Baseball a little bit later on. I know I have two in pocket. Adam Burke is one of our MLB betting experts here. He'll break down what he likes on the card. Also, might as well talk a little College World Series later, too, because Money Moves is hitting the road for the College World Series in Omaha. Tomorrow we leave after the show. You can catch us Thursday and Friday starting at noon Eastern, live from Rocco's, home of the Jell-O Shot Challenge. We're going to get betting insight, tournament buzz, all of the Omaha energy. Head over to VSiN.com/CWS for all the details and a free College World Series betting guide that is up now. Shout out Matt Grissom for putting that bad boy together. Also, how about Murray State getting done yesterday?
Yeah. I'm very excited for this this field as a whole.
Yeah.
Looks absolutely tremendous for some chaos, and very much looking forward to exploring an area I've never been to before.
And the fact that LSU is in the College World Series is going to make Rocco's and that Jell-O Shot Challenge I mentioned.
Oh, I got something for you there.
We'll be right back.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready to get in on the action? First Bet has you covered. Sign up now to access exclusive promotions and bet on hundreds of thrilling horse races every day right from your phone or computer. Head over to firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use the promo code VSiN200 for a 20% rebate on all your wagers the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Start betting today at firstbet.com. Before we went to break, you said you had something to ask me. What's up?
Yeah, so we're going to be out in Omaha. As you mentioned, we leave tomorrow. I had to check in. 2 o'clock? Is that when we're allowed to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We will be purchasing Jell-O shots. We will have to select a team. So have you decided what team you are going to purchase the Jell-O shots under? Because I have mine.
I hadn't thought of it like that. I was more so like maybe that day we're like, if we're backing a team, we buy Jell-O shots for that team specifically, but not for the whole tournament. I didn't know there's like one team that we had to stick with. That is like if we're betting that team day in a game,
you don't have
buy the Jell-O shot for good luck.
Yeah, I don't think you have to stick with a team, but if you're somebody with a strong moral character, you would.
Okay, sir. Yeah. I would like LSU then.
You are jumping, leaking confidence in
I'm
that
jumping
statement.
On the LSU Jell-O shot bandwagon. Those fans are wild. They're chaos. This might also be my way to try to get an invite to the tailgate. Just saying, if any LSU fans are out there that are going to be in Omaha. But I'm going to go with LSU, help bump those numbers. They had like 60,000 or something a few years ago.
Yep.
So I'm going to go with LSU. How about you?
Let's go Tigers, baby. Come on. I'm with you. It's LSU. There's no question about it. From about 4 weeks ago or so, we had our guy Aaron Moore on. Gave us a future. Actually, it might have been when you were gone. I don't know.
I wasn't with Aaron Moore, yeah.
But Aaron, we talked to him. You were here. 6-1. Win the whole thing. LSU, I'm in. I've got a ticket on them to win the College World Series. They will be my team. I will back with fervor and buying many, many shots.
Why are you so confident?
I'm not confident. I'm just saying, like, that's going to be my team. Those
like
are my guys. I have a future ticket.
I don't like that they have to open against Arkansas. I didn't realize you had a futures ticket on LSU. I thought you only had futures that were four to make the College World Series.
Oh, those all lost. Was it Florida, Florida State, and Oregon? They are not in the bracket.
Correct.
I don't think. No. But, yeah, Aaron Moore, we talked to him, recommended LSU, and I was like, cool, let's do it. So it is not a ticket that I was like, you know, I like the makeup of this LSU Tigers team. No, it was more like, hey, this smart baseball guy said this, so I'm going to bet this, and now it's still alive.
Good on you. Now we have all of this LSU love. We should definitely get an invite to the tailgate. I'm telling you, these guys are so hospitable. They have such good food. They even LSU fans, even when their team isn't in the College World Series, still have a section in the parking lot to get it going. They're awesome. So I think we're going to have a ton of fun this week. I do want to give Murray State a little more kudos, though. Fourth regional number four seed ever to make the College World Series. The lone Cinderella that was remaining in the Supers makes it all the way to Omaha, and it's just such a fun story. So good on them. Teams remaining and those first matchups that we're going to have on Friday, we've got Arizona and Coastal Carolina, Louisville taking on Oregon State, then Saturday, Murray State gets UCLA, and then LSU, Arkansas. That is the opening game to start things off that is going to have all of the eyeballs, all of the attention, all of the ratings on it because of how good those teams are in the SEC. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes.
Very much
looking forward to it.
That said, we'll get to a little bit more MLB in a bit. Adam Burke is going to join us for the final half hour of the program, managing editor here at VSiN.com. We are coming off of last night, so I want to make sure we talk a little NHL, NBA, Stanley Cup. got that reversed. NHL, Stanley Cup final, and NBA finals. If there's anything additional you want to make sure we get to here.
I want to get to your Conn Smythe ladder.
We have our updated Conn Smythe ladder coming off of Florida winning game three yesterday. Dominant fashion. We have some rotation at the top of the board here, as expected. And look at some of these odds swings.
I don't care about the odds swings. Look at the precipitous drop for Connor McDavid and Stormy's updated Conn Smythe ladder.
Oh, my gosh. He's third.
He was first.
He was.
Yeah, he was first yesterday. It's a precipitous drop, some would say.
Third on the board. So Sam Bennett, number one. And we did this odds update for you a little bit earlier, but it's worth noting again, coming into the Stanley Cup final, Sam Bennett, despite being the NHL's postseason leader in goals, was 30-1 in Conn Smythe. He was 11-1 to be the finals goals leader. He is now +175, the favorite in this market. Even yesterday before we went on the air, he was still 6-1. We bet him 20-1, or I bet him. I don't know if you joined in on that at all, but you've been very supportive of my Sam Bennett love. Yes.
Come on, we're Money Moves. We're a show. You've been all over this like white on rice.
20-1 was what we put into the account. I have him and Sergei Bobrovsky there as the top two now, especially with the advantage in the series. And Bobrovsky, who, you know, we were talking a lot about yesterday because you were asking if these were high-scoring games, if Bobrovsky's skills gets the benefit of the doubt because of how talented the players are coming at him.
Yesterday helped him, I think, right?
Probably. Yeah. Like there's no question about it.
And so here's the thing again, talking about the intricacy of how you view this award and performances and the nuances of performances. How many shots did Leon Draisaitl have yesterday?
Zero.
Right.
Zero shot attempts.
That's not Bobrovsky. So when one of the team's better goal scorers is being held without a shot, let alone you turning away as many shots as you did, was it 30 or something like that? Mm-hmm. Does Bobrovsky's status does it rise? Or are you looking at that and you're looking at the performance nuance and saying, not to take away from what Bobrovsky did, but his defense took away the team's best goal scorer. Thus, I would give more of a benefit to a doubt to somebody else on the team, i.e. Sam Bennett. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think I'm just saying this because I have the ticket in the account, but I lean that direction. Plus Sam Bennett, just goals are going to be flashier. And if, as this series continues to go on, those guys do continue to score, right?
See, you know what? I'm a good teammate for you. I don't think you would root for me the way that I root for you.
That's
here,
not true at all.
But I was sitting in the bar yesterday after playing golf and I was watching the game and I saw that breakaway and I just stood up. I go, get him! And then, of course, boom, goal, Sam Bennett.
Don't act like I wasn't texting you when the Rockies swept the Mariners last week, okay? I was very supportive.
That's a good point.
But for Bobrovsky, yeah, I think still yesterday, even though it wasn't a Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl day, he still did a lot of really, really good things.
Right, right.
And so I do think that helps the cause. But he's now from +300 to +450 in that market because of what Sam Bennett is doing and also because of what Brad Marchand is doing. And look at the odds leap we have here. And I think a lot of this is based on how many people do have big tickets on Marchand. Like 50 to ones were out there, sure. 30 to one going into yesterday. And if people were jumping on that number, he's now 4 to 1 in the market. He's still fourth on my board though. Connor McDavid, I am still putting above him because if the Oilers are able to come back, obviously he's, you would imagine, going to be a big part of that. But I want to give you this stat because I think it is very important when it comes to the Oilers needing their top guys to perform. And for as good as they've been depth-wise throughout the course of the postseason, I don't think that it's a shock to anybody to say that was the worst game we've seen from them this entire way. But McDavid and Draisaitl, 13th time in history that they have been teammates that they did not get on the score sheet, either one of them, in the same game. Edmonton is 2-11 in those games when neither one of them score at least a point in a game.
Okay.
Draisaitl, who we talked about not having a shot attempt, second time it is 93 games of playoff hockey that he didn't log a shot. So they're a different team when their top guys are going. It's that simple. And so did Florida figure them out to an extent? And is this something we see continue, or will they be able to carry play?
I mean, I believe in Florida. And so
I know you do, and you have.
I don't think, and when I say that, though, is like, I don't think you're figuring out, look, I don't know the intricacies of what they're doing defensively, but I will say, I think that they're a good defensive team. I think that they were very physical with these guys. To use a basketball term, I think they got up in their jerseys. But I don't think that you're shutting down two players to that level consistently over the course of a series. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll go out on a limb. I don't think there's another game in which Draisaitl is held without a single shot. That seems ridiculous. So I think he probably wakes up a little bit. But in terms of doing what they've done defensively to the point where they're going to limit them enough that they're going to give themselves an opportunity to win every single game or maximize their chances of winning every game, I trust that Florida's able to do that better than almost anybody, if not anybody.
I have also decided that, and I mentioned this yesterday, like yesterday was the day I thought we had our best chance for an under. We lose that, obviously, and the rest of the way, I feel like this is an over series, and I think you can feel good about continuing to go to the well with game over, first period over, goal in the first 10. Those have cashed all three games of the Stanley Cup final, first period and game over in all five games of this matchup when you include the regular season. And dating back the last 10 to last year's Stanley Cup final, Florida Panthers, Edmonton Oilers, goal in the first 10 is 8-2. First period over, 7-3. Game over is 9-1. So we go and get goals. We have, and I expect we continue to do so.
Yeah. So 3-1 Florida going back to Edmonton.
I'm still rooting for my game, for my series to be tied at 2-bet. I put that into the account yesterday,
-110.
So that is what I'm rooting for. I'm not going to bet Edmonton again in this game coming up. But I said it earlier, I'm very curious to see how they show up. Similar to how you want to observe Colin Ray, I want to observe the Edmonton Oilers in game four and see what type of energy that we get from them. But I think regardless, we're going to get goals.
Not childish energy where you're throwing hissy fits and getting into fights?
What did I say earlier? They need to play their game and stop trying to beat Florida at theirs, because you're not going to. Florida is known across the league as one of the best agitators. You can't fall into it. The penalty minutes, 140 combined last night. Adam Burke joins us next. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Tuesday edition of Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 158. Rolling along here, I'm Stormy Bonantoni, alongside, as always, Jonathan Von Tobel. And for the final half hour, as JVD, I wish our radio audience could see everything. So that's why you got to get on YouTube TV. You got to get on the VSiN Watch app, all these things, to see JVT's head just like poke into the shot. Adam Burke joining us in studio for the final half hour of the program. Coming up in 15 minutes, we will break down all of our best bets for the day. But Adam, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, I'm good, although it's very contentious over here. Right before the segment, JVT,
you moved your left.
Okay, sorry.
Well,
I didn't mean to crowd you.
Sorry.
As he said in the commercial break when I said what a good agitating team the Florida Panthers are, he said, I've been known to be an agitator. So I would say that's pretty fair.
Be a very good Florida Panther.
Have you enjoyed the Stanley Cup final?
I have. Well, except for yesterday's game. Yeah, but I mean, you know what? I'm sure you've talked about this already.
About hockey. Every game is incredible. You're
so
not allowed to
dramatic.
You're not allowed to say that.
This sounds like a guy who's whining about what people perceive the NBA.
Oh, I don't care at all. Okay. I'm watching.
Well, I mean, look, you know, Florida actually lost more games than they won on the road. They were 20 and 21 on the road. They were very, very good at home. You know, you get the last line change when you're the home team in the NHL, and so they can match up better with McDavid and Draisaitl than they're going to on the road. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you guys were talking about how McDavid and Draisaitl were really kept in check yesterday. Big part of the reason why. And that's going to be the thing that Edmonton has to figure out here for game four. And easier said than done for sure, especially because of the way Florida plays. I mean, in game one, the two teams were even in hits. That has really not been the case in the other two games. So Florida made their adjustment. Edmonton's going to have to make theirs.
I know we kind of joked about this earlier, how much all of the Oilers players were saying after the game that, oh, no, they didn't get under our skin. Mm-hmm. They weren't frustrating us when it was such a clear lie. But also, like, what are they supposed to say in that moment? Do you think they should admit, hey, yeah, we got frustrated, we need to be more disciplined and move forward? Or so that's how
when everybody can clearly see it, it makes you look worse when you're like, no, that didn't bother me. Are you serious? No.
The only one who actually said that was Stuart Skinner, who said that, like, we needed to be more disciplined and we played into their game too much.
Right.
But it is what it is. Okay, let's talk a little Major League Baseball, because I know you have there's a handful of games today. Anything in particular that you really liked? You do the daily articles every day at VSiN.com.
I do. I have to decide what I want to hold back for our next segment for our G-Bank.
Okay.
Best bets of the day.
Wow.
So,
well, we can go golf instead if you would like to start.
No, we can go Major League Baseball. That's fine. I can throw out a few different things. I do have five plays today across four games. So there's plenty of stuff that I can talk about both in this segment and the next one. Look, I mean, I guess I'll go ahead and start with this so I can badmouth my favorite team. So the Guardians can't hit lefties, like, at all. Whatsoever. They haven't all season long. It was a big glaring issue coming into the season that for whatever reason they decided not to spend money to solve. You know, they were okay yesterday against Wade Miley. Luis Ortiz didn't pitch very well, neither did the bullpen, but Andrew Abbott's a hell of a lot better than Wade Miley, and that's who they get here today. I played the first five under 4.5 in this game with Andrew Abbott and Slade Ciccone. So Ciccone's actually been okay. The numbers, the FIP, don't look particularly good. He's given up a lot of home runs. That'll definitely drive up a FIP in a big way. But, you know, he threw five innings of one-run ball against the Reds in his first start for the Guardians, gave up a couple of runs in the sixth inning. Steven Vogt asked him to do too much in that start, and that's kind of what happened there. But, like, I have no idea how the Guardians are supposed to score off of Andrew Abbott, because they can't score off of any lefty with a pulse, and this is a guy who's a pretty good one. So first five under 4.5 for Reds Guardians, and if I lose it, so be it. But, I mean, this is a Guardians team here. You look at them this season, in the first three innings of games, they can't hit, like, at all whatsoever. I mean, they are, like, the worst offense in the league in the first three innings of the game. So at least I think this one gets off to a good start, and hopefully there's no shenanigans in the middle innings.
All right, let's talk about a game where we all have opinions on this. It's an interesting matchup. Noah Cameron's going to get the start against the Bronx Bombers today. Max Fried's going to get the start. Let's focus on Cameron. So I played first three under 1.5. Stormy's got the first five under, correct? Mm-hmm. I think that there is a chance, though, that we are both loud wrong. Talk to me about Cameron and what you see here with him.
Yeah, so I played Yankees first five team total over 2.5 in this one. So Cameron's been really good. Five starts, 31 2/3, you know, ERA under one. But he's a guy who doesn't miss a lot of bats. Batting average on balls in play is under 150. Left on base percentage is 99.1%. When you don't miss bats, it's really, really hard to strand runners because you're pitching to contact. Balls are just going to find holes. There hasn't been enough of that against him yet, but it's going to happen. Yankees have been the best offense in baseball against lefties throughout the course of the season here. He only has a 19% chase rate, so he doesn't get guys to swing and miss outside the zone. All of Cameron's swings and misses are kind of coming from in the zone, which the Yankees do have a tendency to swing and miss at times, but this is also a guy that's allowing a 23.2% pull percentage in the air. As it warms up, as he faces lineups that are more powerful, that's going to become really problematic for him, and the Yankees are a very powerful offense, so I like Yankees' first five team total over 2.5, but I will say for the sake of your bets, I can't imagine the Royals do much against Max Fried in this one. So maybe you get a little bit of life there.
Yeah.
There is a world where we all can win.
Correct. There is a world. That's why I meant, like, for you and I, obviously, to play these. Like, yes. When I say we could be loud wrong, I mean, there is a shot that the Yankees just tee off on this pool. And all of a sudden, you're looking at
left-handed pitching the way they can.
Right. Yes. We talked about that. So my hope was going first three was that the first two times against him, maybe the Yankees are going to be like, oh, okay, like this is some stuff we're not really used to. Oh, and then now all of a sudden we're just going to become the Yankees and start mashing this kid. So,
well, I mean, there is something to that, right? I mean, I don't have data on this, but it is something that, you know, I've kind of thought about a lot in the past. I call it the unfamiliar lefty angle because lefties typically, especially when you're a guy like Cameron who doesn't throw hard. I mean, he kind of sits 91 with the fastball. Those guys typically tend to have a lot of deception in their delivery. They're able to hide the ball. They'll throw four different pitches. They can all command for strikes, stuff like that. It's an unfamiliar lefty. If there's some deception, I mean, you don't pick up on things. And if it's a guy with a deeper arsenal, you can be a right-handed starter and primarily throw two pitches. Outside of, like, Chris Sale, you can't really be that type of left-hander. So, you know, that's one of the things that you look at here with these lefties that teams have never faced before. I just don't know that Cameron can continue to sustain what he's sure. been doing because of the lack of swings and misses. And obviously a low chase rate means he's not really fooling guys with the depth of his arsenal.
VSiN.com managing editor Adam Burke joining us here in studio. And maybe some of this next conversation we can carry over into the next block as well, talking U.S. Open as the third major of the season shifts to Oakmont Country Club this year. We talked a lot in the first hour about how brutal this course can be, all of the bunkers, the church pews that are just insane with how high the grass is and the sand surrounding it, the narrow fairways, the thick rough, all of these different things. So you have to have a player who is at least consistent. It's crazy talking about this course and hearing how an actual conversation is, will the winner of this event be under par for the weekend? How do you see it?
Right, yeah, and I mean, that's something that, you know, the USGA has tried to do with the U.S. Open as often as possible. Make the course really, really difficult. Make it something that's just kind of miserable for a lot of these guys. A couple of things here. A lot will be made of the distance of this course because it is a par 70, but really it's just the two par 5s are over 600 yards. There's several par 4, or there's two par 4s in excess of 500 yards, couple that are really close to it. These are still going to be two-shot holes for some guys. You know, not everybody, but two-shot holes for some guys, especially the par fives. You know, the big hitters will get there. The other guys might have to play a little bit more course management. But there were five stats that I thought were really important here for this week at Oakmont. Driving accuracy, right? You just talked about it. Fairways are narrow. The rough is brutal. Approaches from greater than 200 yards, because you're going to get a lot of second shots. They're going to be 200-plus yards in this tournament. Fairway proximity, so if you are in the fairway, how close are you getting to the hole? Approach putt performance, which is, you know, in terms of lag putting, and there could be a lot of those with the big green complexes here. And then three-putt avoidance, because par's a great score on most of these holes this week. And, you know, we'll see if it rains a little bit, maybe softens up these greens, maybe slows them down to a degree. But those were the five stats that I thought were really, really important here for this week. And, you know, I threw out some placement market bets I think are interesting, and also a long shot first round leader in that article over at VSiN.com.
Ooh. Am I allowed to ask, or you want people to go read the article?
Hey, you can ask. Right, it's your show.
It? Who is it?
Daniel Berger, 75-1. So I don't know that Berger can hold up over 72 holes. I think he can over 18 holes. 12th in strokes gained total, 17th in strokes gained off the tee, 23rd in strokes gained approach. He's 12th in driving accuracy, in the top 25 in approaches from greater than 200 yards. He just can't really putt. But you can maybe putt for a day. Mm-hmm. But this is a guy who I think the stuff he does well, the stats where he grades very well this season, I think fit this course. He's also really good at scrambling, which is going to be important here as well. I just got to get him to putt really well for Thursday. That's it. Just putt well for one day, dude. And I think you got a shot to, you know, I don't know if 75-1 comes in, but I think he's got a shot to be up there on the leaderboard on Thursday.
Okay. I do have a follow-up to this conversation, so we'll hit that in the next segment before we get to our best bets. Good reminder, though, as Adam just detailed, article up at VSiN.com. Same thing with the MLB article. Everything at VSiN.com right now, when you go to VSiN.com/subscribe, $9.99 on a monthly basis, so you can do the full year for $199 when you use our promo code BOOK. Why is the code BOOK? Well, that's because when you sign up, you get a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by our good friend Josh Applebaum. And also included when we do these subscriptions is all of our betting guides. The NFL betting guide is dropping July 1st. Make sure you get your hands on it now. This is a limited time offer. VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code BOOK, full year for $199. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Oh my gosh, Friday, Tuesday edition of Money Moves.
On my mind.
I got Omaha on my brain, baby. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM channel 158. What I hate about when I do that coming back from break, because we've had this whole break just to sit down and. But I'm not fully being prepared for the next segment because you guys are talking my ear off about random stuff. So what's a girl to do?
It's our fault that you.
I'm not going to address that at all.
That you thought today was Friday.
I'm not going to bite.
I was thinking in my head before I said it. I was like, "Wow, the show has gone by fast." But then every time I say that, JVT says, "Actually, it really drags with you." So I just have a lot going on in my brain right now. Happy Tuesday, everybody. I wanted to follow up on a topic.
Let
that we
the record
had.
Show the ratio of nonsense spoken during the breaks. It's heavily skewed
Whoa.
In this direction throughout the show.
Agree to disagree.
How many times do I just sit here brooding during the breaks, just reading stuff? Pretty frequently.
You're brooding just reading stuff?
Yeah, that's what I do.
No, false. Just chaos out of your mouth, calling me names, all these things. I'm just kidding. He's actually very nice. But
this gets more and more awkward every week when I come on this show.
Well, what's even funnier is that the amount of people that actually believe her, right?
Like people think JVT's really mean to me.
Yeah,
he's not.
Like the amount of people that really believe everything that she says. So I'll get like, you're so mean. Like,
well, you're sarcastic and you're sharp-tongued.
Yes.
I have a follow-up question to our U.S. Open conversation last segment, because I know you liked Daniel Berger specifically in the first round, and you hesitated whether or not the putting would be able to last throughout the weekend. But did you have any interest or inkling in those without Scheffler, DeChambeau, whatever the three or four players that it has? I know Rory's included in that. There's one more. But any interest in the 45-1 on him without some of those top guys, is that anything that would intrigue you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so, right? I mean, if he's a guy that I like for, say, a top five market or something like that, I mean, there's a good chance that, at least two of those guys in the without market are also in the top
right.
five. So, there is a chance that Berger could get up there. Again, I mean, putting for 72 holes, I just don't know if it's going to happen. But the tee to green numbers are so strong for him. Plus, he's 10th in scrambling from the rough. So that's a really good stat when you talk about this course. The one thing I had a question about, and, they're going to be doing long shots here next, and, maybe Wes, Kelly, and Matt will talk about this, but, do numbers from the rough, does performance from the rough in previous tournaments matter at all when you talk about the degree of rough that we have at Oakmont? Like, this is unlike anything we've seen all season long. So, do these metrics for guys that miss the fairway and still end up having a decent hole, does that have any relevance whatsoever? I don't know. That's something for more of golf experts than I am to answer, but that was something I kind of thought about, too, as I was writing through this.
Yeah, you see the rough right there, and what it's going to look like when these
crazy
when these balls reach it. That is absolutely wild. And as we were talking with Stephen Hennessy earlier, they're cutting this grass in a way, is the way he phrased it, right? So that it sinks even lower if you were to find the rough. So that stuff looks absolutely deep.
Well, they were cutting it with a bunch of four wheel push mowers, right?
Yeah. I'm prone to. I like those mowers without the. Without the engine.
With the thing that just spins. Yeah.
That used to be the childhood chore, and I would love just doing that.
You had grass here as a kid?
Yes, absolutely. Had to cut it all the time.
I saw this video of a guy recently who, instead of having a lawnmower or a device like that, has been using a scythe.
Oh, okay.
In the yard.
You have to be very exact with that.
It actually I was shocked at how, I mean, I guess that's what they were using back in the day, but how shocked at how well it actually worked, and it seemed pretty.
Oh, those are sharp. Those will mess you up.
Sketchy, in a good way. As far as the U.S. Open goes, Scottie Scheffler, your overwhelming favorite, +275 on DraftKings, seeking his first U.S. Open title. Been on fire, though, won three of his last four events, and is the guy to beat in everything. The Tiger treatment he's getting on the odds board. Bryson DeChambeau, +750, your second shot, looking to repeat. John Rahm, 12-1, as is Rory McIlroy, 12-1. Okay, time for our best bets presented by G-Bank. And remember, everybody, you got the G-Bank trifecta from our friends at G-Bank, First Bet, and, of course, us at VSiN. Listen to how we put this all together. Open up a G-Bank Visa Signature Card. Your first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet. That triggers the $500 trifecta. You'll get $200 in cashback rewards on your G-Bank Visa Signature Card. First Bet gives you a $100 deposit match. And then VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription this through October 31st. $200 value there. That's the $500 trifecta. Head over to VSiN.com/G-Bank. That's VSIN.com/G-Bank. One-time promotion, though, limited to customers opening a new account in response to the offer. Will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. VSiN.com/G-Bank. Let's get to the best bets, gentlemen. I know you have a full article up, Adam, so don't give away the whole thing, but what is one thing that you want to make sure that you give out here to finish?
All right. Well, let's see. I already talked about the Guardians and the Reds first five under. 4.5.
You were holding back. You were saving some stuff.
I also like Andrew Abbott over 4.5 strikeouts in that one. He's not a huge strikeout guy, but Cleveland's K percentage against lefties is very, very high here, really throughout the course of the season, but especially in the last 14 days. So I'm going to go back to the well here and play the Blue Jays again. So maybe I got a little bit lucky yesterday. I mean, they led the game for 7 innings, gave up 4 in the 8th, which is kind of the, you know, way my season has gone here. But then they found a way to outlast the Cardinals in extra innings. And I like Chris Bassitt a lot more than Miles Michaelis here in this one. Bassitt, a lot more strikeout potential. A guy who's, you know, better in terms of the contact management metrics, better hard hit percentage, better barrel percentage, doesn't walk anybody. Yeah, Michaelis gets by with his low strikeout numbers, but Toronto is the hardest lineup in baseball to strike out. So he doesn't get a whole lot of them anyway, but he's certainly not going to get a whole lot of them here tonight. Barrel rate's almost 10%, hard hit percentage over 42%. And also the Cardinals have a bullpen problem right now. Ryan Helsley's blown saves in each of his last 3 appearances. He's far and away the best reliever on that pitching staff. So I'll take the Blue Jays as a short dog here once again in a battle of the birds in St. Louis.
Okay.
All right. I like it. By the way, just a little bit of breaking news. Brewers calling up Jacob Mizorowski today.
Yeah.
So we will see if that's
their top prospect starter.
Yes. Is expected to start Thursday, according to Jeff Passan. We talked about it. Same similar bets here. Yankees, Royals, under 1.5 plus 154, first 3. Also went with Padres, first 5, laid the half run with our boy Dylan Cease. I say our boy. My guy deserves better. I think Cease has been pitching better than what the results have been at him. And going against a, looks like a Johnny Holstaff game for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Think Cease can put this team in position to get it through the first 5 frames. So give me Cease minus the half run with the pod squad later today.
Okay. As you said, I'm on the F5 with the Yankees game under 4.5 for that one. And then the market is moving against the Tigers today in Baltimore against the Orioles. But I like Detroit at the plus 109 here. They have Sawyer Gibson Long, who's going to pitch in bulk relief. Brant Herder is going to start, a reliever with good numbers. Opening for the Tigers, hands things off to Gibson Long, who allowed, yes, 3 runs and 3 2/3 innings last week against the White Sox. That was his first big league start since Tommy John and hip surgeries. He threw 70 pitches, is planning for 80-plus today. So even if you think he's going to get hit a little bit, the Tigers have a top-5 bullpen lineup behind him that's top-8 in slugging and OPS, third-best run differential in the sport. Detroit swept Baltimore when they played in Detroit earlier this season. Orioles, by the way, as favorites, 13-21 this year. I just think that the market and the move is giving them a little bit too much credit, and I'm getting plus money on a Detroit team that I've liked a lot this year and cashed a good number of tickets. So go Tigers for me.
That's all I got.
That's all?
Yep, only 2 baseball plays today for me.
Okay, I have one more, F5 under 4.5. And Adam, I am curious your opinion on it. Nationals, Mets, Mackenzie Gore and Griffin Canning going head-to-head. Do you like, love, hate it? How do you feel?
I mean, Mackenzie Gore has been phenomenal this season. 287 ERA, 321 expected ERA, 258 FIP, big strikeout rate. You know, I think that something that we need to really consider here when we're looking at first fives and stuff like that, guys who keep the ball in the ballpark, those are the things that really end up hurting you. You get one of those, you know, multi-run homers, and all of a sudden your bet is you know, kind of behind the eight ball a little bit. Gore, 11.4% home run to fly ball percentage. He tilts a little bit more toward the fly ball side. Canning, 12%, but he's a big-time ground ball guy, so he doesn't give up a lot of home runs, keeps the ball on the ground. It's hard against both of these guys to get multi-run homers. Mm-hmm. And in the current landscape of Major League Baseball, just because of advanced scouting reports for defense, the quality of pitcher stuff, all the swings and misses that are out there, it's not like you can just string together 5, 6, 7 hits and have a big inning all that often anymore. So, yeah, those are 2 pitchers that definitely fit the mold because they're guys that keep the ball in the park. And I think that's a really good angle to look at for first 5 unders.
Because the Nats bullpen is so bad, I didn't want to go full game. But, I mean, Gore giving up 1 earned run his last 3 combined starts. Griffin, Canning, fresh off a 6 shutout inning performance against the Dodgers, facing a Nationals lineup that's struggling. I feel like a lot of things come together for a first 5 under. So, okay, we'll see if it'll work out.
Yesterday, the
F5 run line with the Diamondbacks worked out.
Correct.
Should have bet the Angels. Tried to tell you.
That's why, again, you
talked me off of it.
Have confidence.
Well, I trust your eye on your team.
I just said that Kikuchi has some command issues, and he does.
He was nails yesterday. He's very, very good. On that note.
Kikuchi.
Before we head out here, anything else people should be aware of on the website before we let you go?
Well, the NFL betting guide comes out Tuesday, July 1st.
Yeah.
All the assignments are out. I will be sending out emails to our hosts and people who I expect to contribute best bets, as well as fill in their picks for our spreadsheet, which is going to be division winners, wild card teams, and then, of course, the Super Bowl matchup as well. So,
beautiful.
You know, that'll come out today, and then I'll send another follow-up reminder next week, and then I'll text Stormy a follow-up reminder on the 23rd when she hasn't sent anything in yet.
Mm-hmm.
Rude. If you want to get the guides, though, you do have to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, by the way.
Yes. Baseball articles are going to be going under a little change in the next couple of days because Adam's going on vacation and somebody else will be writing those in a day.
Yeah, this guy right here.
Well, that's giving it away, guys. Have a great day, everyone. Good luck with your bets.